Welcome to the party at PartyPoker.net. PartyPoker.net is the best place on the planet for amazing free poker action. You can practice your poker and kick your game up a notch. Plus, it's big time fun. Play against your buddies down the road or take on players around the world and take your shot to win seats to amazing offline tournaments with a chance at huge prizes. No one does great poker action like PartyPoker.net. So what are you waiting for? A straight flush? Sign up today for free at PartyPoker.net.
This is The Poker Show with Chris DeCiro, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Rob Wong, back from vacation. I don't tan that much. I like to wear sunscreen, Chris, because I got burned pretty bad a couple of years ago. So I'm all about the sunscreen now, at least an SPF 30 when I go outside. But it was honestly like an oven in Las Vegas. I've never
been... What were you doing outside?
Well, we had to walk. My one friend, he loves the sun. He loves hanging out by the pool, the beach, whatever. And we were at the Hofbrauer House. Two of my friends that came were German, and they are proud Germans. And they wanted to go to this German beer hall, the Hofbrauer House, in Las Vegas. And it's like a 45-minute walk from the Strip. We stayed at New York, and we finished at the restaurant. And they didn't want to take a cab back. They wanted to walk. But as you know, in Vegas, the cabs don't stop on the streets.
No.
And they didn't know that. So we just kept walking, and I kept trying to explain to them, this isn't how it works. We should get a cab. It's pretty freaking hot. It's like 45 degrees Celsius. Yes, the dry heat and everything, I understand. But it was I felt like I was baking from the inside. It was pretty horrific. But all in all, a fun Vegas trip. You know, got to see Chris Angel, which I didn't really care for. My friend wanted to see it. But it was okay of a show, I guess. And saw the UFC card, which I've never been to a UFC fight. So that was pretty exciting. But as far as the gambling went, let's just say I've had better. I've definitely had better. Did not go too well.
How bad was bad?
I don't want to go there.
Did you play poker?
No, I didn't get a chance. That was the only problem because we were
So you actually, after all the discussion we've had about this, you actually decided that you, in fact, were going to be the guy that could beat the odds that built those billion-dollar hotels.
Yeah.
And you could win at blackjack.
Yep. Thought I could do it.
What were you playing? Blackjack?
I was playing blackjack, played a little Let It Ride. It's funny because I never used to play Let It Ride, but my dad enjoys playing it. And I sat down with him one time at a casino and we were playing. I was like, this game's not too bad. And, you know, if dad can play it, I can play it. My dad's not a big gambler, but for whatever reason, he enjoys that. So I thought I'd take a shot at it. And that was actually the one game where I actually made some money on. But obviously, I puked it all back playing all the other stuff. So, but that's why they call it lost wages, right? So,
Still have a hard time wrapping my head around that. I mean, I understand people that don't play poker that want to go and gamble, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're a poker player of any sort, you should be able to find a game you can beat Vegas and make some money. But hey, you know, part of it's the entertainment dollar. If you're going down there and you're figuring I'm going down there with $500 in my pocket and I'm going to spend it on entertainment, your entertainment is giving it to blackjack dealers, then you know, that's the best approach I think you can take to it. But well, far better than thinking that you're going to go down there and you're going to mop the floor with Vegas with your new blackjack counting system.
I never said that.
No,
I
you
never
didn't.
Said that.
It's gospel truth. You didn't say that. It's just, you know, I just have the hardest time. People come back and they're like, I lost all kinds of money playing blackjack. And I'm like, you're supposed to. Don't you understand that?
Did it sound like I was complaining? I wasn't sure.
No.
I mean, I'm upset. I'm not saying I'm happy that I lost, but I mean, like for me, you know, having, you know, been to so many casinos and playing for so many years now, I understand that, you know, I'm not one of those guys that thinks I'm going to go to Vegas. I'm going to come back and I'm going to be a rich man.
Yeah.
I enjoy the entertainment value. And if I win, that's a great benefit. But I mean, for me, I understand how it works. So.
Yeah, I think probably the best analogy is I like to think of the pick games in Vegas, blackjack, craps, roulette. It's really the equivalent of going up to the big musclehead guy in the bar and hitting on his girlfriend. Chances are pretty good he's going to punch you right in the mouth. And I don't know why anyone's surprised when he does.
Yeah.
So it's, you know.
Side note, we actually won that game.
You got punched in the mouth?
No, we actually won that game. That game we actually won. We did not get punched.
Wow.
A friend of mine. So I'll leave it at that. But let's just say, you know, I had a good time in Las Vegas. New York.
Oh, okay.
That's where I stayed. Yep. So,
did you ride the roller coaster?
I've ridden it before. I didn't get a chance to do it this time, but shot some guns as usual.
You went to the gun. You went to one of the machine gun stores.
Went to the gun store. Yeah.
You know, it's a fun experience, and I'll tell you, I've got two funny stories about that. One was a friend of mine was there, and you know, you can pick out packages, right? You pick out packages. You can do World War II guns. You can do
zombie
you can do,
package.
Yeah, right. Whatever. All kinds of cool
everything
stuff.
Under the sun. Yeah.
And they'll give you targets that correspond with it. So, my friend picked out an Osama bin Laden poster, right? You know, classic, the Desert War kind of thing, and it did that whole thing. And he, when you're finished, they give you the target, the rolled up target as a keepsake, as a souvenir. So he was in the store and he dropped it on the floor face down, and it's full of bullet holes. And he's like, "Oh, I dropped Obama."
Oh.
And there was like silence, and people, all of a sudden, people are like, "You can't say that. Yeah. That's not cool."
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's not a good place to make that kind of a slip.
No.
And the other thing that freaks me out, and I don't know which one you went to, but I had no idea, and I wasn't quite prepared for this till I saw it in action, is that, you know, they are giving you some pretty serious weaponry to play with. And they treat it very seriously, too. So when you go step up to the shelf there to start your shooting, to start your target shooting, there's a guy from the gun store behind you. And he basically puts his hand in the center of your back and his hand on a gun that's in a holster at his hip. So that if you even try and turn around, he's going to shoot you dead.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you had that experience.
Well, the three times I've been, it's kind of hard to believe that it's been three times. But the first time I remember... I was shooting some sort of assault rifle and the guy was standing behind me, but it wasn't until like I actually shot the first shot and I kind of raised up because I wasn't prepared for the recoil. That's when he put his arm on me just to secure me. But every time I've been back since, you know, I was just filming my buddies when they were shooting and the guy was just standing there, didn't have his hands on his sidearm or anything. But I mean, that's the thing. They have them there in case you decide to do something stupid, which isn't a good idea. I even saw another guy walking around with this huge knife. He had a knife and a gun, just in case he wanted to slice you up and shoot you down, apparently, just to have his way. But I mean,
America's great, eh?
Yeah, yeah. It's quite a thing to experience if you haven't been. You definitely need to go check
that
out.
I have to ask you, did you go to the Rio and check out the World Series of Poker?
Didn't get a chance to, unfortunately.
You're fired. You're the co-host of a poker show.
I had three other guys with me.
The World Series of Poker. You found time to go to the gun store.
I found time to go for... Okay, first of all, the reason I was there was for my best friend's bachelor party. So we were there to entertain him.
Yes.
It wasn't all about entertaining me, what I wanted to do.
Right.
I would have liked to check it out, but unfortunately, the three other guys, you know, we were trying to stick together and do some things because two of the guys hadn't been to Vegas before. So I didn't want to exactly take them gallivanting all over the place, but definitely... It's on the list. It's on the bucket list, Chris. Right. Don't worry. I will make it there. I'm still young, so I got lots of time, I think.
Well, it was such a good one, and I think you were there while the one drop was on, weren't you?
No, I just I flew in on the 5th, so I just missed it. But speaking of the one drop, I wanted to bring that up because some people on Twitter apparently were confused as to the prop bet that we had. And initially, as you mentioned, it was supposed to be the top four you know, finishers were supposed to be in the money, but they changed it to 9. And at the time we did it, obviously we were confused. But I had agreed to it either way.
I knew that they paid 9. But essentially, the first four places, if you looked at the payout structure, the next five places were basically just giving people the
money
back. So the money was in the first four places. It's in any tournament, generally speaking, they pay 10% of the field. So 48 players, they were either going to pay 4 or 5.
Okay,
where it was going to be the money. In that event. And then, you know, there was some lobbying by the poker players to say, hey, look, you know, we're putting up $1 million of other people's money here, and we probably need to, you know, pay a couple more people, which, you know, I think was the right decision to pay more people. But essentially, those were just, you know, that's like when you play in a satellite to win a ticket to a tournament, and you get that, you know, first gets the ticket,
and then
second and third get a replay.
Yeah.
That's basically what that was. That was the replay. So, you know, it was never considered. I never considered that anything other than the first four places were really that was the money in that tournament. So, you know, we probably could have clarified that so that other people understood that. But I was definitely aware of that. And I made a whole bunch of bets and they were all based on 4.
Right. And for those that don't remember, you selected Michael Mizrachi, Eric Seidel, Jason Mercier.
I went with the A team.
You went with the A team.
You went with the D team, and you were closer than I was.
I don't even remember one of the guys that I picked. I remember Richard Young was the one that made it the farthest. He finished seventh.
Yeah.
And I just randomly picked him. Rick Solomon was another one of my selections. I don't even remember the other guy. He went out on the first day. I remember checking after the first day on the website, and two of your guys had gone down. Seidel and Mizrachi had already lost, and I still had two left, and I went, oh God, my chances have increased, but I don't know. I mean, Mercier is still left, and he's one of the best players in the world, and I have no idea what's going to happen now. And then I keep following, and Richard Young makes the final table and, you know, kicks the can seventh. But I was shocked as to, you know, how far he actually went, and I was kind of surprised that I almost won the bet.
There was always a shot of one of those businessmen doing that. It was funny because when there was 18 left, I made a bet with someone, and we drafted teams of four players.
You picked Richard Young, didn't you?
I didn't pick Richard Young. No, I didn't. But with 18 left, we picked four each. And I had, when there were six players left, I had four of the six. He had Sam Trickett. And that was all he had left. And it ended up, I had Antonio and he had Sam Trickett. And they were heads up for that. So, you know, the reason that Sam Trickett got beat up after that was because he scared me so badly. Just kidding. Yeah. I don't know if you caught that story, but poor Sam Trickett out partying the night after the one drop.
Pretty crazy.
Walks out of a bar and gets beat up by half a dozen guys. So
yeah,
we'll have to get him on and find out his side of that story.
Yeah, that's
exactly what his thinking was as that went along.
Yeah,
how that played out. But it was. I've really enjoyed the poker that I've been back to watch a few of the hands again and again. Just because I thought it was really interesting the way some of the poker played out, and there was some really good poker there, and I think the pros were out of their comfort zone, which was fun to watch. I think a lot of poker players got rich there because there was a lot of them had a lot of pieces of the guys that won. So, it's good for poker. I think it'll be back next year.
Yeah.
And they're joking about it, but I'm not necessarily sure it'll be a joke. They're talking about making it bigger or possibly allowing rebuys.
Wow.
Could you imagine $1 million rebuy?
Yeah.
It'd be like firsthand, just shove firsthand because I'm going to rebuy. I got a bag here. I'm going to rebuy at least five times.
Yeah, rebuys would be ridiculous. That would definitely make it more interesting, I guess. But, you know, in the end, the tournament did what it was supposed to do, raise money for charity for one drop. Crowns a big-time winner in Antonio Sfondiari, and the buzz that was surrounding it. I mean, we talked about it, you know, as long as this poker show has been going on this radio station.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of networks took it, and it made a lot of big headlines.
I thought it kind of killed the buzz of the main event.
Yeah, which is
crazy. To be honest. And, you know, the main event picked back up. Mostly because through day four or five, there were a lot of big name players who had chips. Now there's, as we're doing this, there's probably 60 players left, and there are very, very few. Well, there's really no big name players left in there. There's a couple of you know, pros that people in the business know. Anfilippi is still in, and there's a couple others like that. But, you know, the big names are gone once again. And so we're going to probably have a November 9, October 9 this year of people who we have no idea who they are.
Yeah, and that'll be fun for Law McCarron and Norman Chad to try to come up with stories about these people. So.
Yeah, and I would like to see next year. I'm going to start the lobbying right now. I'll have to throw it out on Twitter, too. I think Norman Chad should be bought into the one drop.
That would be awesome.
I think that would be just tremendous. Watching Norman Chad play for, you know, $18 million first prize money would be, that's entertainment to me. That's the kind of thing to do. So, you know, but right now the main event, it's getting to the crucial stages now. Now the money jumps, we're starting to get to the big money jumps now. You know, once you hit that 100,000 barrier, it gets pretty serious. So, and they're very close to that. So it's going to be fun to watch as always. And I think it's picked up some of the excitement, but you know, I really do think that the one drop stole some of the thunder of the main event.
I should mention coming up later in the show, we'll be speaking with Gavin Smith, who finished 96th in the main event this year, and Maria Ho will also join us later in the program. She also cashed in the main event, but I know we were talking before the show, Jess Wellman, who we had a couple of weeks ago on the program, she threw out a number as to how many people she thought were going to enter in the main event this year, and she's pretty darn close.
She did not bad. I mean, Seth Polansky said more than last year. Last year's number was 68-65. Seth Blansky was wrong. This year's number was 6598. Jess Wellman, as her randomly chosen number, said 6142. So she was 450.
Not bad. Price is right rules, I guess.
Yeah, not bad. 450 players off, which is actually probably closer than Seth Blansky was, if you consider that over 68, 65, But that was a pretty good guess. And I think that's probably a reasonable field for the event this year, and I think there were a lot of people that thought you would see numbers in the 5,000s, and I'm very glad for the poker industry that those numbers are where they are. Look at WPT numbers are up, WSOP numbers have stayed constant. I think the poker industry is in a great spot.
Yeah, pretty good showing this year for the main event, that is for sure. And we'll speak with Gavin Smith and find out what he thought about his main event this year in WSOP.
He's not going to be happy.
On a whole, I don't think he's going to be happy either.
He busted out today, and I can't even begin to describe the feeling. It's like the combination of getting dumped for the first time in high school, finding out that you're being audited by the IRS or the Canada Revenue Agency, and perhaps discovering that you have some sort of venereal disease. Eesh. All in one shot. That's what it feels like, when the last year chips go into the pot in the main event and the cards get turned up and you're out. And it's just such an awful, awful feeling.
That's pretty rough. Hopefully Gavin picks up the phone then when we try to give him a call. Gavin Smith will join us next year on The Poker Show with Chris DeCiro. I'm Rob Wong. The show is brought to you by PartyPoker.net, and it's on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Here's another reason why you should join PartyPoker.net. You can take on all levels of players. Good ones.
I check-raised the donk all in with 5 high and took him off the hand.
And not so good ones.
Whoa, I got a 3-card straight.
At PartyPoker.net, you can practice your poker and improve your game. And take your shot to win seats to amazing offline tournaments with a chance at huge prizes. No one does great poker action like PartyPoker.net. So get the party started. Sign up today for free at PartyPoker.net.
So how many fish are in the river?
This is The Poker Show with Chris DeCiro on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by PartyPoker.net. Rob Wong and Chris DeCiro in studio, and pleased to be joined on the line now by one of the Canadians that had a pretty good run at the World Series of Poker main event this year, and that is Gavin Smith. Gavin, how you doing? Finish 96th place, a little over 62,000. Are you happy with that or a little disappointed?
I'm not happy in any way. I'm very, very, very disappointed.
It's always a tough day, and everyone talks about it. You hear it over and over again about the day when you bust out of the main event. But can you look back at this World Series and be at least relatively, content that you put in a pretty decent performance, like 5 cashes, over 100,000 in winnings?
Six cashes.
I'm terribly sorry. Six cashes, yeah. And about $114,551 in winnings.
Approximately. I mean, I can look back at certain things and be very happy. This is the World Series where I can honestly say that I gave the best effort I've ever given for an entire World Series. I brought my best game every day, and I'm proud of that. And I had a bunch of runs, and I finished within 20 of the money in 4 other tournaments. So I mean, I had a lot of opportunities. I didn't run particularly well late in tournaments. Hence the results the way they are. But, yeah, I think overall, when I look at it objectively, it was a very successful World Series. But when you get close to the main event and you don't get there, there's very little that'll make you happy about it.
Now, your main event, I mean, that was a pretty up-and-down run. I mean, you were pretty close to being out a couple times and really fought and hung tough and built yourself back into a pretty good position there.
Yeah, it's such a unique event that even when you're short, in relation to the blinds, you're not that short. I never really felt like I was desperate at any point. Like even today when I went out, I didn't feel desperate on the hand. I kind of shoved wanting to get action on my hand. Turns out I guess I didn't want it. But it was a really weird. It was a weird final, a weird main event where I had to make. I got put in some interesting situations and had to make tough decisions, and I feel pretty comfortable with the ones I made.
I got to ask you about the one that everyone's talking about as far as your main event goes. Is right in around the money bubble, you laid down a full house face up on the table.
I did.
And you know, a lot of people are saying, well, why would anyone do that? And what was the situation? And I mean, we don't normally talk through hands here, but I think that's a pretty interesting spot. And I don't think people fully understand all the dynamics of that particular spot.
Well, basically what happened was we were close to the money, and it was, I was finding David Peters, who's a very good young internet player, and very aggressive, and he understands, you know, a lot about the bubble and what he's a very smart kid too. But anyways, what happened was I had about 360,000 to open the hand. We were playing 2,500, 5,000 blinds, and this guy opened up for $12,000 under the gun, and I flatted him with two tens. I'm not looking to get too carried away pre flop with two tens. So I, you know, I flatted him. And I'm sort of going to play the hand with, you know, I'm hoping to play the hand with position to see what happens. And David Peters, then out of the blind, makes it 38,500. So the other guy folds. Now, that doesn't tell me that much because of where we are. It's a good squeeze position. David thinks I'm going to flat with a lot of hands, even though I'm not really flatting that wide there, but he thinks I'm flatting a lot wider than I am. So he's not really giving me that much information about his hand yet. The other guy folds. I call the 38-5. See what happens. The flop comes down queen-queen 10. David checks, and I decide to bet 52-5 at the hand at this one. So basically what I'm doing here is I'm telling him, look, I got a hand. You know, I'm betting about somewhere between half and two-thirds of the pot. I'm like, I got some here. So he ends up calling the bet. Now, when he calls the bet, I kind of rule out hands like ace-king, ace-jack, the gutter-type hands, because he knows I'd bet a queen this way, right? So now I'm thinking, you know, he's very likely to have an overpair, aces or kings. He could have a hand like king-jack, possibly, or he could also have a queen. Like, those are hands that he could have. So anyways, the turn comes a king. He checks, and I check it behind him. And then the river comes an eight. He checks it. I bet 85,000, leaving myself 170,000 behind. And he thinks for about 5 minutes and then moves all in. And what it boils down to at that point is I really believe his hand is exactly two kings. It could be four queens, but he's less likely to check four queens because it's so much harder for me to be able to bet the river, right? If he has kings full, he can. The way the hand plays out, it looks like I have a queen, and I will bet a queen all the time on the river. So he can go for the check raise on the river if he's got kings full. So in my mind, he's most likely got kings full, or he could have complete air. But then I'm starting to think about it, and I'm like, well, let's just think about how elaborate this play has to be for him to have air. He has to call 52,500 on the flop, hoping that we're going to go check, and hoping that he can make this crazy check raise all in on the river. I mean, a lot has to go right there for that situation to happen. And I just thought that the odds of him having a bluff, while possible, were really, really small. I decided that, you know, my money could be put in the better spots after that. So I marked it. I kept the 170. You know, and I lasted another 600 people, and he didn't.
And when it's a case like that, Gavin, where, I mean, it seems like you've thought it out so well, and I imagine you've played it, you know, in your mind a bunch of times since, like, you know, being able to break it down so well, does that make you, you know, does that allow you to sleep at night knowing that, you know, that's, you know, you trusted yourself so well on that hand that, you know, that's what you broke it down to, and, you know, you don't have any qualms about laying that hand down?
Well, the bottom line is that what allows you to sleep at night is when you understand that it doesn't even matter if he's bluffing, right? Because you're going to get outplayed. You're going to get outplayed in this game from time to time. You know, that's just going to happen. I'm also going to outplay other people from time to time, right? And if this is the one time when David Peters was sharp enough to play this, do this crazy play and outplay me, well, good for him, man. He deserves that pot. He really does. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with trusting myself and going with my decisions and living with them even if they're wrong.
Well, and all those decisions, I mean, that's a different decision, you know, after the money. It's a different decision at the start of a tournament. But in that particular situation, the dynamic even gets stronger because his move looks that much stronger in that position.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. The situation we were in relation to the money, never went into my mind in the decision.
Wow.
It was all about whether or not I thought there was a chance I was good, and if I was not good, I was out of this tournament, and I could not win this tournament.
Right.
Because I wasn't concerned about whether or not I cashed.
Right. Well, that was it turned out to be the right decision at the end of the day, because you ended up putting together quite a chip stack and running through this. It's for you this year, you said that you were focused more, that you were, you know, you worked harder in this World Series than you have in the past. What changed this year?
Well, times are tougher. I don't have a nice cushy full tilt deal to fall back on. I have two young kids, and I don't know. And I haven't really done that much lately, and it kind of got a little chip on my shoulder, you know, where it's. These young punks sometimes are starting to think maybe you're washed up or whatever, and I want to prove to them I'm not.
Well, that's you've definitely done that pretty well this year with a pretty good finish and battling through the main events. I mean, you look at all the guys that are left. I mean, there's right now as we do this interview, there's about 68 people remaining. I mean, can you handicap who you would pick to maybe make the final table? Is that easy or is that difficult knowing all the variables going into it?
Well, but I think the players are in really good shape. I mean, I think Jason Somerville is one of the best players around. He's busted, all right? He's apparently just busted, so that's that one. I mean, Vanessa is running good. I don't know if she's still in or not, but she's going to be really tough, especially if she can get some chips together. Amnon Felipe's playing pretty well, and he's got some chips, last time I saw.
Yeah, Amnon's still in. Vanessa Selps is out. Somerville's out.
Okay. So I like Felipe. I don't know a lot of people left. I'll tell you the one guy, I can't even pronounce his name. I got no shot at it. That Roland Gisperbobo.
That's about right, yeah.
I'm impressed with the way he plays, and he has some chips together. And I think he can make a real serious splash.
Well, it's you know, a little bit of redemption for you. I mean, I know you would have preferred to go deeper in the main event, but you certainly proved that you still got lots of game left in you, and you know, a new deal this year. And it was funny. I was looking you up for information on your new sponsorship deal, and I came across the fact that Full Tilt Poker still has the Gavin Smith webpage up.
Yeah, I should get rid of that, eh?
Yeah, they probably should. I don't know that there's anybody in the office to take these things down, but
right.
You got a new deal now.
Yeah, I'll look into that. But yeah, that's something else.
I was going to say, is it, you know, when you look back at that, any hard feelings towards them?
No. I mean, I have hard feelings towards Ray Bittar, but I had those when I was with the company. So that doesn't really change anything. I mean, that guy was a village idiot long before this happened. So shit just happened. It's just other people found out. You know, a lot of people knew he was an idiot, but now everybody does.
Well, now he's
So, as far as Full Tilt goes, I can't be upset with anything to do with Full Tilt. They were great to me for 5 years, you know?
Yeah.
And gave me a really good opportunity. So I'm happy with Full Tilt. I got no hard feelings there.
And what about your new deal?
Infinity Poker. Hopefully it's going to take off and be the next big thing. We're in beta testing right now. We're going to launch in August. And, come on out and play.
All right. Well, sounds good. Appreciate you doing this, Gavin. It seems like you got your mindset right and good showing at the WSOP this year. And hopefully we'll do this again soon. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, guys.
There is Gavin Smith, who finished 96th this year at the World Series of Poker main event, and still a lot of poker left to be played, Chris, but like I was talking about right off the top, a pretty good showing by the Canadian contingent this year, including the Luongo brothers, who I remember had a pretty good run, and a lot of people were making quite a bit of hubbub about that.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good showing by the Canadian contingent at all, actually.
We
final tabled someone in
That's true.
A whole bunch of the last main events of the World Series of Poker, so I believe there's one Canadian left,
yeah,
out of 60 or 70 players. So unless he makes the final table, I think it would be kind of disappointing for the Canadians. You know, we've done really well on that stage considering the number of players that we have in the event. You know, Canada's probably got one of the highest final table ratios per per players of any country. So, yeah, that was a little disappointing this year. We haven't won as many bracelets as we've won in past years, too. But, you know, that's the nature of the game with poker. You know, you come close sometimes. Sometimes you get right there, and eventually Phil Hellmuth wins his 12th. So it's just one of those things. Phil Ivey will argue that it's not easy to win. I think, you know, he put on a pretty strong showing and couldn't manage to walk away with a win. So, but you know, I'm enjoying it. There's been some great poker, and that's really the end of the day. That's what you want to see. And it was interesting to talk to Gavin about that hand, because I saw that. I immediately, about 2 seconds after that happened, I started to get text messages and messages from people asking me about that hand. It's like, is this for real? Would Gavin lay that down there? And I reviewed the hand, and I thought to myself, it looked, the way that it played out, it looked pretty strong, and I wouldn't blame Gavin for laying that down in that spot whatsoever. So it was interesting to hear his run through of it. But you know, that's the kind of thinking that gets you there. And if you're not thinking like that, then you probably shouldn't be playing.
Yeah, and I tell you this all the time. I mean, that's one of the most impressive parts for me talking to poker players, is just their ability to focus and you know, remember certain hands and just remember the thought process that they're going through, and just, you know, all the gears that are turning in their head to make a decision. I mean, it's incredible, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and it's something that sometimes, I mean, I find that's one of my flaws as a poker player. Sometimes I make decisions too quickly. I go on my gut instincts rather than, you know, thinking it through. I think there's a plus side and a negative side to that. I think sometimes you talk yourself into things that you shouldn't probably talk yourself into, and you know, other times you make decisions that if you thought it through a little bit better, you probably wouldn't have done what you did. But you know, it's all part of the package that makes up a poker player. And you know, if you talk to a Phil Galfond type of player, the level of thinking that these guys operate on is just absolutely absurd. How deep and how accurate they can be with the way that they think about things. So, you know, it's always fun to see a hand play out, and you wonder to yourself, what the heck was that guy thinking there? And then you ask him, and you find out, find out that his logic made perfect sense, and your feeble guesses as to why he would do what he did were wrong.
Speaking of great minds, we'll speak with Maria Ho coming up on the final segment of The Poker Show with Chris DeCero, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Here's another reason why you should join PartyPoker.net. You can play against your buddy down the road.
What? You won again?
And you can take on players around the world.
What's this loss? You're winning again?
At PartyPoker.net, you can practice your poker and improve your game. And take your shot to win seats to amazing offline tournaments with a chance at huge prizes. No one does great poker action like PartyPoker.net. So get the party started. Sign up today for free at PartyPoker.net.
Holy schnitzel. This guy is good.
Welcome back to The Poker Show with Chris DeCero, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Rob Wong. We'll be joined by Maria Ho just in a couple of minutes' time to chat about her World Series of Poker. But there was a story that I wanted to bring up in the first segment, but forgot to talk about, Chris. Jarrett Nash, and for those that don't know, he was, viewing a religious holiday and got himself blinded out of the main event, and it made a lot of buzz on Twitter and
didn't
on
show
the
up
internet.
For day five.
Didn't show up for day five, and a lot of people, I know some people on Twitter were saying, okay, this got to be a joke, or, you know, why is he not here? And you know, he ends up being blinded out. I mean, quite an incredible story.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's unusual because it's for a different reason. There's a fairly famous story about a guy named Vinny Vin who has, you know, through his life struggle with some drug problems and has often disappeared in the middle of tournaments, and his chair has gone on to cash. His empty chair has gone on to cash because he hasn't shown up to play days. But this was a whole different thing. This was for, you know, I guess he's some sort of devout Baptist and observed the day of rest and wouldn't play poker. And I just thought, if you're such a devout Christian, why are you playing in the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas? It just seems like a strange mix, but somehow he's managed to reconcile that. So I don't get it. And then let his stack be blinded out and still cashed, but
yeah.
Goodness gracious, how many people would have swapped spots with him?
I know, that's I personally don't know how to view it, because on the one hand, I mean, I respect, you know, all the religious aspects and that stuff, but on the other hand, if I'm somebody that, you know, had the opportunity, if I didn't cash, or, you know, I had played against this guy, I mean, I would have switched, like you said, I would have switched shoes with this guy immediately, and I'm kind of upset that, you know, he kind of just let it go by the wayside like that.
stupid.
It is kind of stupid, but we'll see what happens. Maybe somebody will do it next year, and you know, it'll make some buzz as well. But quite an interesting story when it comes to Jarrett Nash. Joining us on the line now to chat about her WSOP experience is Maria Ho, who finished 323rd in the main event. Maria, I'm guessing you weren't too happy about that.
Yeah, you know, there's so many mixed emotions when you get that deep in the main event, and you feel like it might have been a missed opportunity a little bit. So, you know, I don't want to complain about having a $32,000 payday, but, you know, when there's the possibility of making, you know, $8 million, then, you know, you are going to feel a little bit sour.
And last year, you had a pretty good run.
Yeah, you know, and definitely last summer coming, you know, second in the 5K and having a shot at the bracelet, and also in 2007 being the last woman standing in the main event, finishing in 38th place. You know, there's just been a lot of close calls, I feel like, and I just haven't really been able to fully capitalize on it. And that's definitely a little bit frustrating. I mean, I'm ready to win something.
Now, when you look back at the World Series, and it's always tough to ask players this in the days immediately following the bust out of the main event, because nothing is more of a kick in the guts than when the last year chips go in the main event and they're gone. But when you look back, how soon can you look back realistically and look at it and say, well, I did a lot of things right, I did a couple things wrong, I can make this better, this was good. When does the realism kick in?
You know, Daniel Negreanu actually tweeted something that was very, very profound about how you feel when you bust out of the main event. He wrote something like, on the drive back home, you're like replaying every hand and thinking about what you could have done differently to change the outcome of, you know, being on. I definitely feel like I'm very hard on myself, and I know Daniel is too. We are very, very analytical people, and when you bust out of a tournament as big as the main event, it literally doesn't even take 5 seconds before I start, you know, wondering what I could have done differently. I don't really allow myself to wallow in the misery of busting out. I immediately want to think about how can I, you know, play better next time, or what could I have done to change at that, if anything, you know, because I want to hold myself accountable to playing the best poker I possibly can at all times. So you really have to self-reflect, and you have to be willing to, you know, ask those tough questions. So, you know, I definitely like to reassess right away, and I like to, you know, just keep in mind all of the things that I, you know, learned in the main event, because, you know, there's so much play, the structure is so, so good, and the stacks are so deep that you have to look at it as a learning experience every time, because you're getting in situations that, you know, you don't have the opportunity to get into very often when, you know, you play shallower structures. And so, no, it's a great learning experience, and I think I take a lot more than just 32,000 away from it.
And, you know, you're just talking about how you're ready to win, and, you know, six cashes, including the main event this year. And I mean, how close do you think you are getting to get finally that first bracelet? Does it feel close? Does it feel like maybe, you know, there's still some time away that you have to keep practicing your craft, or is it going to happen sooner than later, you hope?
It definitely feels imminent. I mean, I would be lying if I didn't say that I kind of thought I would have won something already, and you know, maybe not a WSOP bracelet, but any major title. You know, I felt like, you know, in the last couple of years, I have an incredible amount of consistency in you know, getting deep in tournaments and having, you know, cashes, and you know, it feels like it's kind of a long time coming for me. And I know that there's so many great players that still haven't won a tournament, and I don't want to sound entitled, but, you know, I know that I work on my game a lot. I know that I'm improving and getting better every single year, and I feel like my results reflect that. But for some reason, that win is still, you know, eluding me.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because there's always a discussion every year at the start of the World Series of Poker about the best players who have not won a bracelet. And it's a discussion that we as journalists have all the time. And your name has started to come up as in the ranks of, you know, best players to not win a bracelet. That's a mixed blessing in a lot of ways, because it's credit to you that you're that good that people think that you should have won one already. But at the same time, nobody wants to be the person that hasn't won one yet.
Right. You know, I feel so honored, you know, to be, you know, spoken about and to have my name thrown in the discussion of something like that. And, you know, I definitely feel like, you know, I don't believe that I'm more deserving of a bracelet necessarily than, you know, some of the other really great players that I have so much respect for. But, you know, I know how hard I work. I know how much of an effort I put in. And I know that, you know, I not only do I want it, but I feel like, you know, I've always tried to, you know, take the World Series very seriously and to, you know, play my best and to, you know, keep to a good schedule and all the other outside factors that I think, you know, make people good players. And, you know, I just know that I do everything that I can that's in my power to, you know, put myself in the best position to do well. And, you know, hopefully someday, sooner than later, I'm going to get the result that I want.
Well, we're going to back it up a little bit now, because now this year you spent the summer with some of your friends. Now, your friends all happen to be really, really good poker players. And I know that at the beginning you had a lot of fun, despite injuries, hospital visits, and everything else. But I think that a lot of people mistake that, and they look and go, well, you know, these girls are just getting together and partying and having a good time. But there's a lot to be said for when you put poker minds like, you know, yours together with Vanessa Russo and Vanessa Selps and Livs, you get a whole bunch of different perspectives on how to play the game and how to approach it. And what happens is you get a boiler room of thought for poker, and I think that can really help.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm not going to lie. We definitely have had our fair share of fun this summer. But if you know anything about the work ethic of especially somebody like Vanessa Selps, then you know that when we're in that house, there's a lot of poker strategy discussion going on. And there's a lot of, you know, hard work and people pushing each other to, you know, go and play in the tournaments and do well. Because, you know, Vanessa Selps, she has that mentality of, you know, she wants to win. She works really hard. She, you know, pushes herself all the time. And so, you know, when you're in a house with somebody like her, and when you're in a house, like you said, with, you know, great poker minds like Vanessa Russo and Liv, you know, you really do talk a lot about poker, and you do really, you know, your game's improving by leaps and bounds because you get to pick their brains and you get to share information. And you know, I feel like, you know, of course, we're girls and we've had our, like, fun time, but there's definitely been a lot of poker going on in this house.
Well, I have to ask you, because, you know, I mentioned this to Chris before, and, you know, there's video up on PokerNews.com. They actually visited Vanessa Russo's crib, where you guys were all staying, and it looks like the most ballin' place ever to stay in Las Vegas. I mean, you got the pool, you got basketball court, you got pretty much everything under the sun. I mean, that must have been nice to, you know, when you had a rough day at the tables, to be able to get away and just enjoy all that. You mentioned, you know, you guys had the poker chat, you know, at the house, but it must have been nice to just have some fun and relax.
Absolutely. I mean, yes, and you are right. You, your eyes do not deceive you. Vanessa Russo has a balling place, and it has been so amazing to stay there. I mean, she is so generous to, you know, allow us into her home and share it with us. And, you know, it at first, I'm used to staying really close to the Rio during the summer, you know. I mean, I'm here for one thing only. But, you know, she lives 25 minutes away from the Strip, and in the beginning, I was like, yeah, I don't know how I feel about living so far from the Rio and all that. But you know what? I just realized that it's so amazing to be able to bust out of the tournament, to go home to a nice place like that, and to be surrounded by your friends who understand exactly what you're going through, like the emotional roller coaster of, you know, busting out after being deep in a tournament. And there's something that's a really welcome change, and there's something that has been really comforting about that, that I think that's made my game better. I mean, I had a record number of caches for me this summer, and I honestly attribute that a lot to having a really safe and comfortable environment to go home to and to decompress.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, and, you know, it's something that's not been that uncommon since the internet poker age started, for people to sort of get together and, you know, that talking things through seems to help a lot. But it's also nice to have fun too. And listen, are you going to plan on doing this next year? Is this already in the plans for you guys to do this again next year?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'd sign up for it. Like, just let me know. I mean, I have had such an incredible and an enjoyable experience, and Vanessa Russo has always been one of my closest friends in poker, and, you know, I've gotten very close with Vanessa Selps and Liv from living with them this summer, and, you know, I would love to share that experience with them again.
You know, I'll tell you one thing. If you guys room together next year, I personally am going to start offering out prop bets on someone out of that house winning a bracelet, because it just makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I feel like, I mean, I really do think that people should have made bets like that. We should have done, you know, our house against a house full of, you know, four other male poker players, because, you know, I feel very confident in the caliber of poker players we have living in our house.
Now, we've seen a bunch of people on Twitter, you know, whether it's Daniel or, you know, a lot of pros, just saying it's time for some R&R. We know how much of a grind the WSOP is. I mean, is that what you're planning right now? Is that what's next for you, just to take some time off? Or are you going to be right back at it, grinding, getting ready for next year, and hopefully getting that first bracelet?
Yeah, I definitely feel like I'm going to need a break. I've had a lot on my plate this series outside of just poker. I've had, you know, a lot of other things going on that's in the works. And, you know, I don't ever want to complain about being busy, but there's something to be said to, like, having some time to yourself and being able to take some time off. So I think after this, I'm going to head back to L.A., see my family, you know, get some quality time with my friends. And after that, you know, I'll definitely be back on the road. I'm actually going to head up to Vancouver to play the W Coupe on Stars, and then I will be going to WSOPE in Cannes again this year as well. So, you know, I definitely will have a very much needed break from poker, but then I'll jump right back in.
Any TV appearances coming up?
Yeah, there's definitely a couple things in the works, and, you know, once we're, you know, ready and able to talk about that, I'll definitely call and let you guys know.
Well, it's always great to see and hear what you're doing, Maria. And, you know, I know that you're probably disappointed in the way that the WSOP has come out. But like you said, six caches. And I think that you and the rest of your housemates there are all knocking on the door of that bracelet. And I wouldn't bet against any of you having it next year. So enjoy the time off and congratulations on the six caches. And we'll look forward to next year. It'll be even better.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on.
There is Maria Ho, Chris, and, you know, it seems like she's pretty pumped about her WSOP, but maybe, you know, she's ready for that big win. She's talking about whether it's a bracelet or just any major title. I mean, she feels like she's right on the cusp, and it's just within her grasp and within her sights. It's good to hear, I mean, the fact that she's just so hungry for it, and, you know, you can really hear it in her voice.
Well, I think, you know, you can't underestimate the effect it has of having a bunch of players that all have different styles. Like, I mean, Maria's a great cash game player. She's really, you know, she thinks the game very clearly. Vanessa Russo is a game theory person, you know, does all the math. Vanessa Selps is aggressive out there, you know, and is willing to take risks in the right spots. I think you start mixing all those together and the different approaches to it. Man, oh man, could you create a hybrid poker player? So if they all learn a little something from one another, you know, I think it's going to improve their games, and they're all already great players. So I love that idea, that prop bet, by the way, taking their house for a bracelet next year. I'm going to see if I can get some action on that.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. And, I mean, it just sounds like there's something special brewing there with all those girls. So it's pretty exciting.
And hella good parties, too.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Maybe I'll put that on the bucket list, too. Maybe I'll just drop by. Probably get kicked out at some point if I try to drop by, but we'll see. We'll see what happens next summer. That is Chris DeCero. You can follow him on Twitter, at Chris DeCero. You can follow me at Wong SN590. If you ever miss an edition of The Poker Show, you can find us on iTunes or Sportsnet590.ca. This has been The Poker Show with Chris DeCero, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.